Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on climate change BS right after this. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a foreign and alien ideology. Our traditional American values are individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. But these foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. You know, we're taught to covet our neighbor's property, and then we call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve notes. And then we practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods that we call government. And we're not getting away with our crimes either. We're now paying up to 75% of everything we create and produce in taxes. We live in mortgaged houses owned by savings and loan companies. We drive cars, but they're owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four has a $70,000 consumer debt. We Americans owe a $12 trillion national debt, and we're surety for another $100 trillion of unfunded government obligations. Now, our financial institutions are leveraged out to more than $1,000 trillion worldwide, and our Social Security system retirement is a chain letter Ponzi scheme, and you and I are living from paycheck to paycheck, and then we're taught to call all of this prosperity. Now, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way in our Constitution. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and ask for our four-hour compact disc package? Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we're talking about climate change. There's a publication put out by the Heartland Institute that I've been reviewing. It's called Climate Change Reconsidered. It's a report by scientists around the world, not just here in the United States, but by the thousands. I wouldn't say tens of thousands, but by the thousands that take exception to this global climate change propaganda that we've been subjected to over the past 15 or 20 years. It's called Climate Change Reconsidered. It's a report of the Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Change put out by the Heartland Institute. They're located at 19 South LaSalle Street, Suite 903 in Chicago, Illinois, and the number is 60603. That's the zip code. They've got a telephone number up there. It's 312-377-4000. Why don't you write that number down, 312-377-4000, the Heartland Institute. They're also online at www.heartland.org. $154 is the price, 850 pages is the size. It's about 18 cents a page. There isn't a page in the book that doesn't have some new scientific story to tell. Now, here's one here called wildfires. Now, one of the things that we've been told for years is that the CO2 in the atmosphere causes dandruff, cancer, heart attack, glacial melting, and wildfires. Well, maybe not in that order, but if there's a problem out there, it's got to be global warming, isn't it? Now, I don't know that they've blamed dandruff on it, but they will if they haven't. So we might as well take a look at wildfires then and ask the question, are all of these wildfires that are going on, especially in California, and starting right about now, it's July here in the United States, we're at the peak of the fire season. Starting about now, we're going to start having forest fires in August and September, July, August, and September. And they're going to burn millions of acres of timberlands and brushlands and here in the United States. And then, of course, every time that those are reported, they're going to say, global warming, global warming, global warming, CO2, CO2 in the atmosphere, global warming, CO2 in the atmosphere. Now, we've been hearing that for the last 15 years so often and so many times now that we all believe it. Hell, we just take it for granted. Well, that's caused by global warming. Well, yeah, that's just more global warming till we've become resigned to it. Now let's take a look at wildfires. Chapter 6, subject number 10. As stated by the IPCC, an intensification and an expansion of wildfires is likely globally as temperatures increase and dry spells become more frequent and more persistent. That was published in the IPCC 2007, volume number 2. Below, we test this claim by reviewing the results of studies conducted in various parts of the world, ending with a recent satellite study that evaluated the world as a whole. Now, boys and girls, there are people out there that spend their time collecting your tax dollars studying fires. There are people out there living off of your tax dollars, getting grants and study money from the government, and they just study glaciers. Another guy, he just studies polar bears. And it's not just one or two guys, it's thousands of these guys, and they're called scientists. It's a whole subculture of people that do useless work, get paid a lot of money, live off of you and your labors, and it keeps them off the streets and out of the pool halls. I'm not suggesting that their work isn't vital and it isn't needed. Hell, maybe it is. But a wildfire specialist over here isn't exactly something that you go to college and study and then you go out and you go to work, you know, for Standard Oil, digging for oil. You know, there's not very many people in the world. I had one here one time, a laser physicist. I asked him, I said, what do you do? And he says, I'm a laser physicist. And I said, well, what is a laser physicist? And he says, well, it's a physicist that studies lasers. And I thought, you know, physicists are guys that study atoms and molecules and things like that. And he said, yeah, well, we study light rays and how to bend them and how to heat them up and how to kill people with them. A laser physicist is a guy that works for the Lawrence Radiation Laboratory in Livermore, California, and he gets his paycheck from the University of California at Berkeley. And he's leased out to the Alamogordo, New Mexico research site. And I said, well, that's really, really interesting. I said, well, how many laser physicists are there in the world? And he said, at last count, 30. I said, do you mean to tell me that you are one of a little cadre of people in the world called laser physicists, and there's only 30 of you? And he said, yep, that's right. And then I said, well, that's really amazing. Now, here's a guy who went to college, studied, and got his degree, and he's a laser physicist. Have you been to your local laser physicist store? Have you been there to buy a laser? I mean, come on, kids. What in the hell do we need this for? Now, I can understand going to Walmart and buying a box of cherries. I can use those. The other day, I bought a DVD player so I could watch some of these DVDs, you know, on my television screen. I can understand that, and I can understand somebody learning how to make those and selling them. That's got some marketability. But lasers? When was the last time you bought a laser? Huh? And what are these lasers for? They're for killing people. I asked him, I said, well, what do you do with these lasers? And he said, well, they're for military application. I said, military application? What are they going to do? Are they going to build pontoon bridges across the Mississippi River? He said, no. Lasers are beams of light which are designed to create great heat, which can melt things. And I said, you know, like people? He said, yeah, they're anti-personnel, but they also melt tanks and buildings and things like that. So your life then is dedicated to destroying people and things. Your job in life is to invent a machine, a gun, a device that kills people and destroys property. He said, yeah, that's my business. And there's 30 of us in the world. Now, the reason I bring that up is because, you know, a lot of these people out here, I think, are totally unnecessary. Now, Amish people have a purpose in life. They're producing food for us. Food is something that all of us need. But I would contend that a laser is something that we do not need, probably don't want, could probably live a hell of a lot better without. It's kind of like nuclear weapons. The genie's out of the jar, I don't deny it. But I think we'd all live better if we'd have never discovered nuclear energy. Never heard of the crap. Never studied it. Don't know nothing about it. Our age of ignorance in 1850 was a better time for us than today when we've got nuclear energy. Now, here's a guy that goes out and studies wildfires. And there's a guy by the name of Carcelet, or Carcelet, depends, I guess, on whether you're French or not. Et al. In 2001 developed high-resolution charcoal records from laminated sediment cores extracted from three small kettle lakes located within the mixed boreal and coniferous boreal forest region of eastern Canada, after which they determined whether vegetarian change or climate change was the primary determinant of changes in fire frequency, comparing their fire history with hydroclimatic reconstructions derived from I don't know what this is. There's a symbol here and I don't know what it means. And lake level data throughout the climactic optimum of the mid Heliocene between 7 and 3,000 years ago, when it was significantly warmer than it is today. All right, so going back in time, these scientists have come to the conclusion that it was significantly warmer years ago, and the polar bears did not become extinct. And somehow or another, the world survived until today. And thank God we have a wildfire specialist here who's studying all this so he can report to us. They report that fire intervals were double those in the last 2,000 years, meaning fires were only half as frequent throughout the earlier warmer period as they were during the subsequent cooler period. They also determined that vegetation does not control the long-term fire regime in the boreal forest, but that climate appears to be the main process triggering fire. In addition, they report that dendroecological studies show that both frequency and size of fire decreased during the 20th century in both West, example Van Wagner in 1978, Johnson et al. In 1990, Larson 1997. I mean, there's a bunch of guys in here that have studied this. Possibly due to a drop in drought frequency and an increase in long-term annual precipitation. Borgeron and Archambault, 1993. These several findings thus led them to conclude that a future warmer climate is likely to be less favorable for fire ignition and spread in the East Canadian boreal forest than over the last 2,000 years. All right, pause. Hey, put this on pause now. When you have a warming trend, you have fewer wildfires. We're in a warming trend. Now, if you were to ask the people of California if they're getting more or fewer fires, I think from what I saw the other day, Schwarzenegger was on TV and he said, we've got a year-round fire season in California now. I remember when I'm from California, and I remember when I was a kid, we had a fire season in July, August, and September. 3 months a year, there's a fire season. Now, this past March, there was fires in California. The governor says, hey, we got a year-round fire season. You're in a drought out there in California. What you people out there in California need to do is to start practicing the Ten Commandments again. You used to do that years ago. And then about 1933, you got off on the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now take a look at the period 1933 to 2003. And ask yourself, is that as good a period as it was, let's say, from about 1883 to 1933? How about growth? How about fires? How about building? How about population growth, you know, economics and so on? And then ask yourself, now I'm not an evangelist, I ain't sitting here telling you to give your heart to Jesus now, but there's two models that work here in the world, and these two models are the Ten Commandment model and the Communist Manifesto model. Now, we don't often use those terms to describe these two philosophical models or these economic models, but the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto goes back into history, clear back to the Babylonian mystery religion. We called it just that, the Babylonian mystery religion. It's an economic system. It's a program that people follow, like public school is a part of it. Income tax is a part of it. You know, government snoops, that's another part of it. The Ten Commandment model deals with privacy, limited government, tithing in place of the income tax, homeschool instead of public school. No inheritance tax. You know, things like that. Real practical, down-to-earth programs. Now, over the past 50 years out in California, you've made a decided change. Now, for us simple people who read the Bible, and we look at Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, it seems to be pretty plain. It says, if you practice my law, I'll give you rain in due season. If you don't practice my law, I will turn your heaven to iron and your earth to brass. So you people in California just ask yourselves, well, do you practice the Ten Commandment model or the Communist model? And has your heaven turned to earth and has your earth turned to brass? Are you being blessed or are you being cursed? Now, just one or the other, ask yourself the question and then say, well, maybe there's a cause and effect relationship here. Now, these wildfires don't occur just in California. They occur in Indonesia and Africa. Hell, they occur around the world in different places. But a scientific question is being broached here. You see, the forces for climate change advocacy are telling you that these wildfires are caused by CO2 in the atmosphere. Us simple-minded people used to allege that that's caused by God, the creator of the universe. We're bad. God causes these bad consequences for bad actions. Cause and effect. It's not scientific. I didn't claim that it was. I'm just pointing out that that's the way we used to explain it. Now, today, they come to us and they say, well, no. See, those simple-minded religious folk out there, see, they don't understand global warming, climate change, and CO2 in the atmosphere. That's what's causing these wildfires. So luckily for all of us, we got some wildfire graduates from the university that are out here working for the big colleges and got grants, and they're out studying the wildfires. And what did they find out? They found out that in warming trends over the last 2,000 years, you have fewer wildfires, and in cooling trends, you have more wildfires, which is exactly the opposite from what the global warming guys are telling us. That's my point, the exact opposite. In another Canadian study that sheds important new light on this subject, four forest scientists investigated regional fire activity as measured by the decadal proportion of area burned and the frequency of fire years versus non-fire years in the Waswanipi area of northeastern Canada, located at 49.5 to 50.5 north and 75 to 76.5 west longitude. And the long-term relationship with large-scale climate variations using dendroecological sampling, along with forest inventories, aerial photographs, and ecoforest maps. The results of their investigation revealed that instead of the interval of time between wildfires shortening as time progressed and the climate warmed, there was a major lengthening of the fire cycle. In addition, the four researchers note that in the context of the last 300 years, many regional fire regimes of the Canadian boreal forest, as reconstructed from dendroecological analysis, experienced a decrease in fire frequency after 1850, or the end of the Little Ice Age, as they describe it, and Bergeron and Archambault in 1993, Larson in 1996, and a further decrease after 1940. Okay, and there's the next paragraph. So I'm just reading one paragraph at a time here. I'm on page 356. When the climate warms up, you get fewer and fewer fires. Now, I was watching, I don't know what the hell it was, few years back, there was a god-awful rash of fires in Indonesia. And they blamed it on El Nino. Now, you know, I'm just a plumber. And I'm not a wildfire expert, and I'm not a laser physicist. Hell, I'm just a plumber. And I was watching the TV, watching the telly, watching the story. And they told me, see what happens when you get too much CO2 in the atmosphere? Indonesia burns up. And I didn't have any reason not to believe it. You know, when I'm watching PBS and Big Bird, I figured that they're trying to educate me. They call it the educational channel. And I'm watching PBS trying to get smartened up. And they kept telling me, see, global warming and CO2 in the atmosphere burns up Indonesia. And so I got that lesson down. CO2 in the atmosphere burns up Indonesia. Now, I picked up this book from the Heartland Institute. It cost me 18 cents a page. Well, if I'd have paid for it, it would have cost me 18 cents a page. Now, I got to confess, I didn't pay for my book. But you're going to have to pay for yours. But I'm going to look over here toward the end of this article over here and see if you can't get wildfires. Yep, look at this. Look at this. Additional information on this topic of wildfires, including reviews of newer publications as they become available, can be found at http://www. You ready for this? CO2science.org. There it is again. Subject /f/firegw.php. I think you can get this article that I'm reading to you right now, and I haven't got time to read all these articles. I'm just picking out the highlights, the creme de la creme, and then telling you where to go get the information. And God, talk about a bunch of references here. I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 30, 45. Yeah, at least 45 references here. Now get this. warmer climate produces fewer wildfires. I know, you've been watching Brian Williams and Katie Couric, and they told you the exact opposite from that. So somebody's lying to you. Either the Heartland Institute is lying to you, or Katie and Brian are lying to you, one or the other. I mean, you can't have it both ways. On the one hand, they're telling you global warming causes Indonesia to burn up, and this guy's telling you, no, that ain't true. Warmer climate produces fewer wildfires. Now, that's not to say that there aren't wildfires in warm climates and wildfires in cold climates. There's wildfires everywhere in the world. But when you inventory them all, like we did with glaciers, remember I told you? How many glaciers are there in the world? Can you remember that, boys and girls? The answer is 160,000. How many glaciers in the world have been studied? The answer is 67,000, 42%. Of the 42% that have been studied over the past 20 years, which glaciers and how many have been studied extensively? And the answer is 200. And what proportion is that of the whole? 0.00125%. Remember that? I mean, these guys are coming to us and they're giving us all this BS and all this tripe over here and telling us it's CO2 causing all this problem, which is a conclusion drawn from insufficient facts. That's number one. But number two, they haven't even got the damn facts. 58% of the facts they haven't even looked at. And of the 42% of the facts that they have looked at, 20% of the glaciers are increasing in size, 80% are decreasing in size, and the number of glaciers that they've studied that are decreasing, how many was that? 42. 42 glaciers out of 160,000. That's not science, that's propaganda. And it's the same thing here with these wildfires. They tell us, oh my God, Indonesia is burning up, California is burning up, and we've got a year-round fire season. Well, that's true. You guys in California now are in the midst of a drought, and you can expect to have more wildfires in the midst of this drought. But remember, it's not the temperature, it's the precipitation. That's what your problem is. You ain't got precipitation out there. The temperature is not the cause of your wildfires. You could say, well, it's an exacerbating factoid that comes in there. Well, that's true. But see, in California, it doesn't rain in June, July, and August. For 3 months, no rain. And that's when you have your fire season. All right, now, let's take a look at another paragraph here. A further study of this subject. A fellow by the name of Luzon, L-A-U-Z-O-N et al., in 2007, investigated the fire history of a 6,480-kilometer area located in the Bay de Chaleurs region of Gaspésie at the southeastern edge of Quebec using Quebec Ministry of Natural Resource archival data and aerial photographs combined with dendrochronological data. Results indicated that coincident with the 150-year warming that led to the demise of the Little Ice Age and the establishment of the current warm period, there was an increase in the fire cycle from the pre-1850 period, 89 years, to the post-1850 period, 176 years, and that both maximum and mean values of the fire weather index decreased statistically between 1920 and 2003, during which period extreme values dropped from the very high to high categories, while mean values changed from moderate to low categories. And in this particular part of the world, therefore, 20th century global warming has led to a significant decrease in the frequency of forest fires, as weather conditions conducive to their occurrence have gradually become less prevalent and extreme. We have the same thing that has occurred here. There's still, around the Ozarks here, some old fire towers that, that they erected, you know, back in the 1930s and 40s. I can only point to two of them. There's one over at Squires and there's one over at West Plains. They're unmanned. Nobody has been up in them fire towers for years and years and years. And we have very few forest fires here. Now, once in a while, now we had a fire outbreaks, some fire outbreaks here 2 or 3 years ago. Got dry. And they were watching for fires, you know, and they'll tell you, no, don't burn and so on. Fire danger is high. See, right now, there's no fire danger at all. None. Zero. There are fewer fires. I've been here 25 years, and there are fewer fires in the last 10 years here than there were in the first 5 years when I arrived. And they come out, and they put them out with fire engines now. Of course, there's more people live here. That's true. Got more roads than we've ever had before, and that's true. But here's my point. We're having fewer fires here. That's just where the bottom line is. And when we do have fires, it's at a period when we have drought. That's precipitation that causes it. The CO2 and the hotter temperatures don't have anything to do with it. That's not what our problem is. It's when we have a drought. So it's the precipitation. That's what we're looking at here that causes these wildfires. Now, has there been a shortage of precipitation? Well, we'll take a look at precipitation next time. We'll open up. I'm going to write that down right here at the bottom of my page. Precipitation. Let's put that down here. Put it down number 23. And then I'll look it up in here, and we'll take a look and see, has precipitation dropped off over the last 100, 200 years? And it, worldwide, are we getting less rain? Are we getting more rain, getting the same amount? Has it relocated to different areas? This scientific textbook refutes this global warming crap that we've been listening to. And I call it crap because science has a place in our lives. But propaganda does not, should not, and we ought to avoid it. Propaganda is put out by people that have an agenda. And if you want to subscribe to the agenda, that's fine. I'm not opposed to people that are in favor of global warming and want to raise taxes. I'm not opposed to communists. Those people all have a right to their views, their political aspirations and ideologies, just like all the rest of us. But they want to enforce their views and their political ideologies on the rest of us. They want the rest of us to pay 77 cents a gallon in gasoline taxes so that they can spend it on what they want to spend it on. And I say, let them go to work, earn their own money, and spend it on whatever they want. I don't want to work to produce the 77 cents a gallon to give to these guys to go out and spend it on their own lusts and desires. And I not only don't want to, I'm not going to. How do you like that? All right, I got to give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not eight schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-7000. 4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. You want to keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about climate change. More specifically, climate change BS. And I'm not talking about Bachelor of Science. BS in its conventional term. Now, I said I was going to take a look at precipitation, which is the cause of this in the wildfire. This conclusion here, talking about wildfires, although one can readily identify specific parts of the planet that have experienced both significant increases and decreases in land area burned over, the last two or three decades of the 20th century, as we have done in the materials reviewed above, for the world as a whole, there was no relationship between global warming and the total area burned over this latter period, during which time it is claimed that the world warmed at a rate and to a degree that were both unprecedented over the past millennium. Listen, that's not true. Tain't true. The warming here on planet Earth over the last 1,000 years was warmer between 1200 and 1550 than it is today. See, there was a warming trend where it was 10 degrees warmer than it is, on average, worldwide, 10 degrees, 10 to 15 degrees, in fact. I'll take the lower number, 10 degrees, between 6 and 1200. Then a stabilized period from 1200 to about 1550. And from 600 to 1550, there were buku people living in Greenland. That's why they called it Greenland instead of white land. See, it's pretty white up there in Greenland today. Well, the Danes settled that, and they had colonies there. And that's because it was green, and there was grass growing, and it was warmer by 10 or 15 degrees. Now, today, it cooled off, starting in 1550 to 1880. All those people died out. Died out. Those colonies were lost. Those people died. They couldn't live there. It was too damn cold from 1550 to 1880. This is not a period of unprecedented warming. It is a warming period from a period of cold over 300 years, 1550 to 1850. Now, for 150 years, we're warming, but it's not unprecedented. It's very common. It's happened many times before. And fairly recently, in geologic time, it happened here within the last 1,000 years. Now, I said I was going to look at precipitation, so I'm going to flip back here and give you the name and address again. This is Climate Change Reconsidered, a report of the non-governmental International Panel on Climate Change. These are the non-whores. You've got the whores and you've got the non-whores. Well, the whores put their report out for the government, and now the non-whores come into the game. And they're being sponsored by the Heartland Institute. and they've got a phone number. It's 312-377-4000. Write that down, 312-377-4000. And I'm promoting their book, and I'm recommending their book, because I think that for 18 cents a page, it's well worth it. And I don't think you're going to find, any publication anywhere that's as comprehensive as this. And here it is. It's on page 22, called Precipitation. It's in the executive summary. It's in chapter 1. 1-4, page 22, Precipitation. So I'm going to flip over here to page 22. Let's see what the scientists tell us about precipitation and global warming. One of the predictions of atmospheric general circulation models is that the planet's hydrologic cycle will intensify as the world warms, leading to an increase in the frequency and the intensity of extreme precipitation events. In an early review of the subject, Walsh and Pittock, 1998, reported there is some evidence from climate model studies that in a warmer climate, rainfall events will be more intense, and that there is considerable evidence that the frequency of extreme rainfall events may increase in the tropics. Upon further study, however, they were forced to conclude that because of the insufficient resolution of climate models and their generally crude representation of subgrid scale and convective processes, little confidence can be placed in any definite predictions of such effects, which translated into layman's terms says, we don't know. Nope, we just don't know. 2 years later, Lebel et al. In 2000 compared rainfall simulations produced by a GCM with real-world observations from West Africa for the period 1960 to 1990. Their analysis revealed that the model output was affected by a number of temporal and spatial biases that led to significant differences between observed and modeled data. The simulated rainfall totals, for example, were significantly greater than what was typically observed, exceeding real-world values by 25% during the dry season and 75% during the rainy season. I'm going to pause right here and underline that. We go out here and we make a computer model. And then we call this science, and then we make predictions. People just love predictions, don't they? It's like walking up to the checkout counter, and you see all of these newspapers. You see like the National Enquirer and the Sun, and they've got these predictions, like California is going to fall off into the ocean, and Gene Dixon says, you know, Rasputin predicts. People are just fascinated by prophecy. Now, I'm an old man, and I can tell you, after having been watching these prophets now for the last 70 years, I've been paying attention to them for 50, and I haven't seen a damn one of them yet that's ever predicted anything at any time for any cause or reason. And if they did, I missed it. I haven't seen a single one of them. None. Zero. I'm still waiting for California to fall into the ocean so that my Nevada property will become ocean beachfront. I'm still waiting. Know what I mean? So, they get these computer models out here, and they say, okay, well, now we're going to apply science to this. They apply science to it, and they're in the rainy portion of their program, they're wrong 75% of the time. Now, boys and girls, come on. Let's wake up here. I can predict the weather with a coin and do it 25% more accurately than this computer model. Listen to this number again. It says the simulated rainfall totals, for example, were significantly greater than what was typically observed, exceeding real-world values by 25% during the dry season and 75% during the rainy season. Hell, if you flipped a coin, it would be 50-50, wouldn't it? And when you flip a coin, it simply says, I don't know. I like the weatherman. He comes on here and he says, we got a 30% chance of rain tomorrow. Translated into reality, it says, well, if it rains, the weatherman told you there was a 30% chance that it would rain, and it did in fact rain, so he was right. Now, if it doesn't rain, he told you that there was a 70% chance that it wouldn't rain, and sure enough, it didn't rain. And he's right again. Boys and girls, that's not prophecy. That's BS. Just BS. Let's wake up. Smell some coffee here. Rub the sleep out of your eyes. This guy here comes along and he says 25% during the dry season. Hell, I can get 50% accuracy flipping a coin. He gets 25% accuracy with a computer. Hell, I can get 50% with a coin. He gets 75% wrong. Hell, I can get 50% right flipping a coin. I don't need a computer. And these guys call this science, for crying out loud. Don't you think that we ought to wake up here? Now, they're going to charge us 77 cents a gallon. Remember that number, 77 cents a gallon for gas to go out here and fix something that ain't broke. I saw a bumper sticker the other day, and this guy says, government philosophy, it goes like this. If it ain't broke, you fix it until it is. The old adage was, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Government, they got to fix it. Well, there's a reason for that. You know, when you've got Tommy Pettit over here, and he's unemployed, and we need a job for Tommy, don't we? We need a job for laser physicists, wildlife biologists, wildfire specialists. I mean, all of these scientists out here, you know, There isn't any reason for these people to exist. Let me flip over here to the table of index again. The index. Let's ask ourselves. We got droughts. A drought, that means it isn't raining. Do you need some specialist to tell you that it's dry outside? Or could you just walk outside and look and say, oh my God, there's a drought out here. How about floods? When you've got water flowing in and out of your living room. Honest to God, do you need a scientist to tell you that we're in flood conditions? Do we need somebody to study tropical cyclones? And after they get through studying them, are they going to stop them, increase them, diminish them, shorten them, lengthen them, or do anything about them? Somebody says, well, we can predict them. Well, with about the same accuracy, or maybe a little less than flipping a coin, if honest to God, you believe that the weatherman, when he says there's a 30% chance of rain, if you believe that that's predicting the rain or warning you about the rain, you know, get after it. But you've been to public school too long there, son. I mean, you've been in public school for so long, you can't think anymore, if you believe that. Now, storm surges, yeah, there's things out there called storm surges, but there isn't anything you're going to do to stop them or slow them down. Now, it is true when there's a hurricane coming, that the National Weather Service, when Hurricane Katrina was coming, they said, we're expecting a 15-foot tidal surge. And I think they were just about accurate. I think it was 12 to 15 feet. That was good. That told you people, you know, that were living there on the beach in Biloxi. You looked out there at the casino from where you were up on the hillside, and you said, let's see, when we add 15 feet of water, where is that going to be here in the living room? Oh, yeah, just about up here to the bottom of the windowsill. Guess it's time for us to move to higher ground. That's got some value, I don't deny it. That's got some value. But there wasn't anybody there that could do anything to slow it up, stop it, turn it around, or send it off to Mexico. No, it's like the guy that calls himself a laser physicist. Nice guy. Liked him. Paid his bill. But what in the hell do we need him for? These guys, they don't produce anything. Now, a logger, he goes out in the woods, cuts a tree down, loads it on a truck, and sends it off to the mill. The guy in the mill cuts the log up into boards. The boards are then sent down to Lowe's or the building materials store. We can go in and buy the boards, bring them home, and then we can build a room on, add a room onto our house, or we can build a chicken coop. That's got some value. That's something that we all need. You can go into a Walmart store. I bought some cherries the other day. Thank God there's somebody up here picking cherries. They're loading them in trucks. I brought them down here to West Plains. I went in the store and I bought some. Very handy. Thank you very much. I need cherry pickers. I can use those. Laser physicists, wildlife biologists. You're up here counting the polar bears. Excuse me. Who in the hell was counting the polar bears 600 to 1200 AD? Nobody. Did the polar bears survive? Yes. Do we know how many there were? No. What the hell difference does it make? Who cares? Now, of course, government cares. They want to employ wildlife biologists. They need to take people who live in Brooklyn, New York. Send them through the public school system, educate these people so that they can send them out, give them $100,000 a year of taxpayer money so that they can give this guy a job. Then he takes the money, he spends it on cherries and keeps the guy that's picking cherries employed and keeps the guy that's cutting trees out of the woods employed and buying boards and adding rooms onto his house, and I don't deny it. But in the final analysis, you and I have to go out and work and provide our own living. And then we got to pay our taxes to support all of these parasites. All these scientists out here are parasites. They produce nothing and they consume much. Soldiers in the army are parasites. Policemen, firemen, city councilmen, these are parasites. They produce nothing and consume much. Now, in the natural world, we have a thing called the beehive. And in a beehive, there's a number of classifications of bees. There's a queen bee. She's pretty necessary. She produces all of the new workers. All of the population of the beehive come out of that queen bee. She's a very important, necessary element in the hive. Put another way, this hive cannot survive without her. Then we have a bunch of people in there, a bunch of bees that are called workers. Those workers are divided up into several gangs. There's bees in there, they just make propolis. There's others that just store pollen. There's others that go out and gather nectar. There's others, all they do is build cells. Then there's some other workers, they're just guard bees. That's all they do is guard. They're like soldiers in the army. They don't do nothing. They don't go gather pollen. They don't build cells in the hive. They just stand around with guns, warding off enemies, guarding the beehive. Then there's another group in there called drones. Those are male bees that fertilize the female. Now, every once in a while, the bees go through and they clean house. They get rid of the unnecessary guys. At the end of the year, we don't need any guards anymore. So they take the guard bees out and they kill them. Throw them out alive. The queen has already been fertilized, so they take the drones out and they kill them. We don't need them anymore. No sense feeding a bunch of drones and a bunch of guards. And if we're not building any more cells, then we don't need any more cell builders. If there's no more pollen to gather, then we don't need any more pollen gatherers. And so now we're waiting for the next season, aren't we? And so we go into the wintertime over here bare bones with what we need. We keep the queen, we keep the workers, couple of guards, couple of drones, couple of pollinators. And then other than that, we get rid of all of the unneeded bees. All the parasites we get rid of. Now that's where we're at here in society. We got a lot of parasites out here. That's one thing that we pick up here from this science book called Climate Change Reconsidered. Boy, we have a lot of parasites. And one group of parasites is working with the government parasites with an agenda on hand to convince the rest of us worker bees out here that we need to take a proportion of our honey and send it off to Washington, D.C. to support a bunch of drones and guard bees that produce nothing and consume much. Like, you know, Wall Street bankers. God, that's a needed activity. We need a bunch of Wall Street bankers, don't we? Like we need another laser physicist over here to develop a new device for killing people more effectively. As if we can't kill people fast enough the old-fashioned way, you know, by just shooting them. All right, well, so much, you know, for precipitation. Let me flip over here a couple of pages here in conclusion on precipitation. In spite of the billions of dollars spent by the United States alone on developing and improving climate models and models' ability to correctly simulate even the largest and most regionally important of the Earth's atmospheric phenomena, the tropical Indian monsoon hasn't improved at all. The scientific literature is filled with studies documenting the inability of even the most advanced weather stations to accurately model radiation, clouds, and precipitation. Failure to model any one of these elements would be grounds for rejecting claims that the IPCC provides the evidence needed to justify regulation of anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions. With the solutions to all of these long-standing problems continuing to remain elusive, and with Lynn suggesting that the sought-for solutions are in fact prerequisites for good simulations and predictions of future climate, there is significant reason to conclude that current state-of-the-art CGCM predictions of CO2-induced global warming should not be considered reliable. Now that's one group of parasites who are contending with the other group of parasites. And the one group of parasites, the government parasites, are sitting there telling us we need to send them 77 cents a gallon and double our electric bills to keep those parasites off the streets, out of the pool halls, and working diligently over here, giving us new science models with computers that we could more accurately predict with a coin, just determining heads and tails is 50-50. So the next time you hear some guy tell you that there's a 30% chance of rain tomorrow, remember that you could get closer to that by flipping a coin than he can with Doppler radar and a computer model. So why should we pay for it? Well, I'm about out of time again, so let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.